to Piercing the Veil on bbsradio.com with your host Jordan and Corey and new guests appearing weekly. During the show, Jordan and Corey will pierce the many veils of illusion to reveal the universal truths and tools for negotiation inherent to success in one's daily life, including but not limited to 1. Multidimensional wordsmithing. 2. Mastering and commanding negotiations. 3. Constructive trust and wealth preservation. And 4. Spirituality. Pierce the veil, and the truth will reveal itself.
All right, we're back again. Thank you, our listening audience. This is Piercing the Veil. Typically, Jordan Michael Askew is here with myself, Corey Stevens. Jordan is out in the field dealing with some client business right now, so he will not be joining us today. But I do have John Figueroa, who was who's been a guest on previous episodes, episode 7, I believe, Spirituality and Psychedelics, and episode 11, On the Nature of the Universe. Welcome, John.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the show again, man. It's great to be back.
Yeah, man. You know, we like to have at least two people on to create a dialogue and things. We like how that works. And I was glad to have you here, man.
Yeah, once again. Yeah.
Yeah. So, man, briefly,
what are we going to be talking about?
Well, I discussed it with Jordan, and we thought we'd come up with a conversation about conspiracy theory and what that means literally, and how that term is utilized and spun. What's the nature of conspiracy, and how conspiracy theory, you know, the various sides of it, right? I mean, on the one hand, I've heard a quotation somewhere that said a conspiracy theorist is someone who questions the narrative of known liars. Okay, so that's that would be in defense of the conspiracy theorist. And then the common notion of conspiracy theorists is kind of a derogatory term for basically, you know, nut job people who have their alternate version of reality that has no bearing on reality. So those seem to be the two extremes. And so hopefully we can explore somewhere in the range and get a better understanding of all the dynamics afoot with that. What do you think?
Man, sounds exciting.
All right.
Man, that's a pretty big domain we got to cover for that.
Yeah, well, you know, we got an hour. We'll see how far we get. First of all, what is conspiracy? What does that mean? The word conspiracy. What does the word conspiracy mean in your mind?
Conspiracy, what is it? Two people working together in some fashion, right?
Right.
For some kind of scheme in it.
Right. Yeah, like they are conspiring to two or more people. Here's Wikipedia, okay?
Always trusted Wikipedia.
Yeah, trusted Wikipedia. But generally for definition purposes. A conspiracy theory
they're pretty good at that, at least.
Yeah. Is an explanatory or speculative hypothesis suggesting that two or more persons or an organization have conspired to cause or cover up, through secret planning and deliberate action, an event or situation typically regarded as illegal or harmful. The term conspiracy theory has a derogatory meaning, denoting explanations that invoke conspiracies without warrant, often producing hypotheses that contradict the prevailing understanding of historical events or simple facts. So there you have it, conspiracy theory. So what are some common conspiracy theories that folks might have heard of before?
Well, I think with most people, the moment you mention conspiracy, everybody still jumps towards, you know, either something that's very current or 9/11.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Those are the two things I hear the most. Something, whatever's happens to be happening this week, and then if they're not talking about that, they're talking about a 9/11 conspiracy.
Right,
usually.
Right. I think the biggest one for me would be like the Kennedy assassination or something.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's bunches of them. There's tons of them. What would be FDR allowing Pearl Harbor to happen in order to get into the war, right? And and JFK, okay? We have the narrative that Oswald, the lone gunman, took some shots at Kennedy, and that's it. That's the story.
Yeah.
And over time, in all those cases, right, Pearl Harbor, JFK, clearly 9/11, there's a lot of alternative information aside from the common narrative that's promulgated in the media. A lot of alternative suggestion, research, information that runs counter. That runs counter to the common narrative. What's interesting, I mean, in my view, conspiracy is part and parcel to power. Okay, there's nothing new. Like, you know, when I hear that term conspiracy theory, it seems like that's something new that's just come up. You know, and automatically. Oh, yeah, automatically a conspiracy theorist is like, you know, someone who thinks that everything is a lie and that, you know, anything that happens to come up, like you were saying, some recent event, you know, or some cataclysmic event, as we've mentioned, that basically the common narrative is bullshit. And I would tend to not really disagree with that, you know, from my understanding of history and human nature and the nature and the nature of the cabal. I mean, clearly there are powers that be here. That here in the world who have always used secrecy or subterfuge or misinformation or disinformation to arrive at an outcome that serves their agenda. I mean, that's just the history of whether it's individuals, you know, a couple of, you know, two guys, bank robbers, two guys getting together to rob a bank or whatever, or something, you know, something more profound or far-reaching like 9/11. For example,
like 9/11,
the interesting thing about conspiracy and conspiracy theory as a term, like a conspiracy theorist, it's kind of like that term. You've heard the term sovereign citizen.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so that's like to me that there's a similarity in the use of terminology like that. It's a label. It's a very convenient label to be able to place on a specific group of people to marginalize them, right? To marginalize their opinions or their work or their presentations or theories, as it were. And so a lot of people who tend to, in my experience, who tend to debunk or try to debunk conspiracy theorists in general or marginalize them, not necessarily to go into what they're suggesting and to take it apart in a critical manner, but just as a label, it kind of reminds me of the fact that typically over time in the past, a lot of things were done in secret, right? Powerful people, powerful people making decisions in secret. Nobody knows about it except a few people, and they push certain things through that serves their agenda, and regardless of the outcome on other people. Now,
they did this for years, and they kept on getting better and better.
Yeah. I mean, it's nothing new. I mean, you can go throughout history and pull up examples of things that were done in secret and for a specific result and played out. History shows us that, in fact, those things were actually true. Now, what's different, I feel, in this time is that we have a lot more access to information and a lot more ability to communicate between people, particularly with the advent of the internet and various telecommunications and so forth. Information gets out fast, and I would imagine that as a result of that, it would be much more difficult for folks to be able to pull off some kind of maneuvers that are complex, if you will, without someone finding out about it.
Like kind of, you know, like dark web stuff and
even shit, just go on YouTube, you know, there's all kinds of discussions about things, and people taking different positions about things, a myriad of subjects all over the place, you know, things that a lot of people just commonly took for granted. So it's almost like in the book of Revelations, I believe it says that, you know, we will be entering into a time where there are no more secrets. And I kind of feel like we're in that time period now. But the one thing that's interesting to me about this whole thing is like, okay, whereas you might have at one point an individual or a group of individuals might have been able to conspire in secret to pull something off, it's still relatively easy to do. But now it seems like one might be able to reach the same outcome through an overabundance of information.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Right? You put misinformation out there, you put disinformation out there, and even better, you let a bunch of people who, for the most part, may not be such good critical thinkers, let them get a hold of it on YouTube or various sources online, easily accessible, and then you create all of these other streams of thought and conversations and dialogues and theories and ideas, and it just starts to run wild. So it's almost as good for subterfuge, if not better, than secrecy. Do it out in the open and then have so many people weigh in with their opinions that there's no way to possibly reach a real consensus or anywhere near the truth, because there's a million different stories, you know. Before there was one story, the official story, right? And now there's the official story and a million other stories that may or may not have any validity whatsoever, or be half true, or 75% true, or 25% true, but not quite the whole thing. What comes to mind, is something like this phenomena that's been going on for, I don't know, 6 months, a year or something. I kind of
know where you're going with this.
Yeah, I picked up on it a couple months ago. It's the flat Earth theory. Okay.
Yeah. I knew it.
Right. Flat Earth theory. Okay. Yes. Historically, there has been before Galileo and Newton. I would say, you know, before the last 500 years, and even concurrently, but it seems that there was this the heliocentric model, meaning the Earth is a globe, it's a sphere floating in space. The moon is a sphere floating around the Earth, and they are orbiting around the sun, which is a certain distance away, and there are other planets orbiting around the sun, each there with their own distances and orbits away from the sun. That wasn't, yeah. You know, that's our common understanding of the environment that we live on. But it wasn't always like that.
And
very there were different. Historically, there's what is called a flat Earth model, where the Earth was flat. Maybe it's a flat disc, or a chunk of something floating somewhere with a dome.
Yeah.
Right. And that the firmament, you know, and that the stars and things were actually part of the dome. Or moving across the dome, as opposed to us looking at it from a ball in space, and that it looks like the stars and the heavenly bodies are moving because we're moving, which is again seems to be the common modern understanding of it, but. That flat Earth theory is having a resurgence, and I've noticed that a lot of people are putting a lot of energy into it, and coming up with a lot of explanations and supposed proofs or evidence, mostly from what I could see, kind of circumstantial evidence that is backing their supposition that the Earth is, in fact, flat. Now, I don't know. What's your general feeling on that? I'm you know.
Oh yeah, I've never for a moment thought that the Earth was flat. I've always, you know, I never believed that we were the center of the universe or anything like that. I always knew that, you know, the Earth is just like a grain of sand on the beach of suns and the stars and planets and such, and you know, yeah, that's just the flat Earth. The whole flat Earth thing never resonated well with me. I've literally just laughed it off half the time. I think I've done a little bit of research on it, but you know, not too much. Not just really just to entertain the idea, like, oh, where are these guys coming from when they talk about this, you know.
Right.
Like, where is the reasoning at? You know.
Right. Now, you know, there's they put, and not to go into it too deeply, but they put forth a lot of premises, evidence, and things and so forth. Some of it, which like yourself, I haven't delved into too deeply. Some of it's kind of compelling, but if I dig into a lot of it, just doesn't work for me. And I think if you dig in on some of the stuff, it can be ascertained that some of the ideas that are being put forth just don't really make sense. But it's what I find intriguing about it overall is not so much the specifics of it, but that it's something like conspiracy theory generally. It's representative to me of what's going on in this time where people, more and more people, are doubting or skeptical of the official narrative of who we are and what this place is and what we're doing here. All right? That's the overarching, you know, that's the overarching thing that I'm coming away with. It's interesting to me how people are coming up with alternate views of reality, basically because I think we've been really come to understand, at least in the 20th century and the 21st century, that ostensibly we've been lied to more often than not. Okay, so yeah. it's coming out in all kinds of ways, and the Flat Earth theory is definitely one of them. And again, to me, it kind of goes back to, you know, is this viable information, or is it just more sophisticated distraction, right? It used to be the TV. Sit in front of the TV, get a story, and kind of be distracted from your life or other things that you could be doing. Now, like I tend to think that the internet is just like television on steroids with interactivity. And so, you know, are we just getting more and more sophisticated at distracting ourselves from reality? That's the question that I would ask. And it seems that this conspiracy theory in general can, in the extreme, be an example of that. It's just, some of it is just more sophisticated, complicated ways to be distracted, and some of it is people really kind of critically analyzing the official narrative. So I tend to give conspiracy theorists some room.
Yeah, and you really have to analyze each and engage it for yourself.
Right.
Yeah, each one.
Each thing. It's an excellent point, man. It's really up to us to be able to look at things critically and make our own decisions about things. The one thing that kind of puts me off about the conspiracy theory realm is that people are so fast to jump on the bandwagon of something. They want to latch onto something, right, that has some indication of proof that we're all being lied to, okay, which is, I think, is obvious to most anyone who thinks about it. But then, you know, maybe 80-20 rule applies. You know, the majority of people are going to latch on to another narrative just because it's another narrative. It's a counter narrative. Ah, yeah, I knew it. Right? I knew it. Right. I knew, and then people latch on to their alternative knowledge, supposedly alternative knowledge, and I've found that people tend to manifest like a superiority complex about their alternative narrative. I have the truth. You all have been lied to, and you know, that's something that I see people get caught up in.
I think. I mean, this is just my personal opinion, just from experiences and such. That people generally they can tell, they can just feel, they may not understand it, but they can feel that they're not free in the way that they really would like to be. They don't know. They don't even know how free they would like to be, but they just know that they're not as free as they'd like to be. And so, any effort they can do to rebel and have a sense of freedom in them, you know, I think that's something that's very enticing.
You know,
the conspiracy theorists who are ready to jump on the whole, you know, flatter things or, you know, other conspiracies.
It's empowering.
Yeah, exactly.
In a world where people feel powerless. It's empowering to, you know, it's almost like being a revolutionary, right? Ah, I'm a revolutionary. I'm against the system, right? So
yeah,
being a self-professed conspiracy theorist or clinging to certain counter-narrative, counter-official ideas can make people have a sense of power or purpose or rebellion, as you say, where they don't otherwise. And I think that is that's why it's so easy to take pot shots at the conspiracy theorists. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't...
Yeah, exactly.
So again, you know, I give conspiracy theorists a little bit of room, but I also understand the people who maybe have a more mainstream bent or focus who ridicule them at the same time.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, we can take both, yeah.
You know, again, it's like there's nothing's black and white. It's all degrees, and every lie contains, the best lies contains elements of the truth in it. Right.
Yeah. Everything deserves full analysis.
Right.
And, you know, and then, but, you know, it's up to us to sift through which ones to believe or not.
Right. And also, too, yeah, and knowing that, you know, there's knowing, and then there's believing. You know, I have a lot of impressions myself about who we are and what the world is about and what's going on. But I can't say fully that I know.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, do I know how we got here? What we're doing here? You know? Was it just randomness? Yeah, was it randomness over 4 billion years, or was it designed for a purpose?
Too perfect of an accident for it to, you know, be an accident. There's got to be design behind it all. That's my personal view on it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree
so,
with you.
I mean, that's come from just thinking, you know, being observant of everything.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. Everywhere I look in humans and in nature and I see design. I think the fact that we just told randomly, you know, and I think even there are mathematicians who've run the numbers on that, that the odds that the universe or nature would organize itself in the way that it has on pure chance is astronomically improbable.
Yeah, I remember. I can't remember the name, but I remember seeing like the equation that some guy came up with that would find like, you know, the probability of what you were just saying.
Mm.
It was a very cool one, but I can't recall the name to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't jive with. Now, does the environment or does nature, as part of, if you take it from a creation standpoint, is there adaptation in nature's system over time? Yeah, I can see that. I can definitely get with that. You know. Is there some evolutionary process, or are things changing over time within a designed system? Yeah, I can see that. I can roll with that. We see it in genetic. We see it in genetic mutation and all kinds of things, and life forms adapting to their environment and things that happen in their environment, and so forth. So yes, there's certainly some adaptability in it, but I can't wrap my head around it being completely random. Well, Like, for instance, even before I heard about the flat Earth theory, I was always amazed, and I don't even remember the first time I made this observation. I might have been a kid, you know, 10 years old or something. And the idea that the sun and the moon, from our vantage point here on the surface, appearing to the human eye to be exactly the same size, and yet one is, what, a few hundred thousand kilometers away or a few hundred thousand miles away, and the other is 93 million miles away, right? So according to that, you know, according to that equation, right, the sun is 400 times the size of the moon and is 400 times as far away. And then you have these eclipses, which clearly to the human eye on the surface looks like the moon and the sun are exactly the same size. What is the likelihood of that happening at random?
Man, that is a
very I mean, seriously, that shit has perplexed me for a long time, you know.
I never thought about it that way.
Right. Okay. And so, so from a flat earther's perspective, okay. Now, clearly, most from what I see, flat earth people, they are definitely about the earth being designed, right? Because a lot of times they quote, historical documents, they quote the Bible, they quote other kind of, you know, other historical characters and their assessments of it. But for the most part, I think the whole notion behind the flat earth theory is that we've been lied to, that the whole heliocentric system was to make us, as you referenced, seem insignificant in the universe, and that runs counter to, like, you know, some Judeo-Christian or a biblical narrative as to us being creatures of a creator, and that us having a profound significance in what we're doing here. So the flat earthers are saying the heliocentric model by design, not only is it a big lie, but the point of the lie is to, you know, basically God is dead, and that this shit is all random, and that you're basically a speck of dirt in the middle of infinity. And, right. And that... And that, you know, like a nihilist, like it's pushing a nihilist anti-God agenda. You know, that I find compelling about the flat Earth theory. I don't agree with some of their approaches, but with regards to that nihilism, that seems to be foisted increasingly, particularly in the 20th century with the industrialization and all the, you know, the wars, you know, the hundreds of millions of people that were murdered, genocide by their own countries or by other countries and so forth. It was a very nihilistic, negative period of time, which we're still a part of. So I kind of get that, you know, but
yeah.
But again, as you say, I really think it's about people making their own assessments, you know, and how much time do people have in this life when they're living their lives? They have family, they have careers, jobs, they have obligations. There's a limited amount of time in the day in order to get all the stuff you got to get done in a day. You know, how much time do people actually have, unless you're a specialist, unless that's your job, to really go in and do exhaustive research on any particular subject matter, which is what would be required to come up with anything close to a definitive conclusion about anything.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Pretty much what I would take.
I mean, like, for instance, 9/11. Mm-hmm. I was there that day. I was in New York. I was 8 blocks away on a job site. I had a construction company in New York. Okay?
Oh, man.
And I heard the first plane fly overhead. I heard it crash, or I heard an explosion.
Uh-huh.
And then within 30 seconds, I ran down the block from the entrance of the building I was standing at, and I saw the fireball from the first plane entering the north side of the North Tower.
Mm.
And I could clearly see the shape of, I did not see the plane crash into the building, nor did I see the second plane crash into the South Tower because I was on the north side. I did see the explosion.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
But you didn't see a plane.
I didn't see the plane because it had a southern approach, supposedly. But I did see the explosion. Nor did I see the first plane hit the North Tower, but I probably less than 30 seconds after it hit the North Tower, or after that impact or explosion, I did see it, and I did see the fireball coming up out of the World Trade Center, and I did see a hole in the World Trade Center that clearly showed, it looked like a plane, right? It had small slits. It was a hole the shape of a plane.
Yeah.
So I saw that with my own eyes.
Okay.
Now that might have been a hologram. I don't know. They're saying that the planes were holograms and shit. I don't know. I heard the plane fly overhead. It shook the building. Okay?
Yeah.
Which means it was, you know, it was 500, 600 feet off the ground at best, right? I heard it and felt it fly over the building. I was standing outside. I didn't see it fly over because, you know, the buildings and the streets wouldn't allow me to see the sky from where I was standing. But I was like, whoa, my first reaction was, what the hell was that? And then I heard
and then I heard
the explosion, okay? And I ran down to the corner, probably about 50, 80 feet, okay? And in that time period, uh-huh. I got to the corner. I looked at the World Trade Center. I saw an airplane-shaped hole in the building, and the fireball was still rising, the impact.
Damn.
Okay, so in my view, that was no fucking hologram. Okay? That was no hologram. What were you saying?
Yeah, I think if I was there, I would have to agree.
Yeah. And there was no, you know. Now, that being said, as far as the eyewitness reports, I also saw both buildings fall.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I guess I, like everyone else, was sort of enamored or hypnotized by the spectacle, and my dumbass didn't get out of there as I should have, until, you know, I was actually moving up the West Side Highway. My plan was to go and donate blood at St. Vincent's Hospital, which is on 14th Street, a few blocks, uh-huh. I don't know, 15, 20 blocks away from where I was.
Yeah.
And then from that vantage point on the west side, I saw the buildings go down. Now, did the buildings fall straight down into their footprint from my vantage point? Yes.
Yes.
In my understanding of physics, did that make sense? And did it not resemble a controlled demolition? Yes, it did. Were there eyewitness reports of people on the ground in the building, right? Law enforcement and fire personnel that heard other explosions and stuff happening in the building? Yeah. Yes. Did I witness the pancaking of the floors collapsing down onto themselves? Yes. Mm-hmm. Did I see jettisons of smoke or material blasting out of each floor? Yes. Immediately in my mind, I was like, that was the air pressure of the floors collapsing, pushing out air and debris out the side. Does that mean that those weren't small demolition explosions? Not necessarily, you know? And the thermite and the fact that they hauled off all the metal without anyone being able to analyze it. And the fact that there were put options on American Airlines and United Airlines, and the insurance company that insured the World Trade Center, right? A very erratic number of put options, meaning that there were bets that the values of these companies were going to go down. Debts were very unusual because because airlines were doing well and on the upswing at that time. So to have these huge amount of bets against United Airlines and American Airlines seemed like an anomaly. And on top of that, no one ever claimed those funds, apparently. Right? They made bets against the value of these airlines. The value of the airlines due to this event crashed. Someone was stood to make millions of dollars off that transaction and never collected.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes on and on and on. And my point being is that, you know, the number of data points to be able to ascertain what actually went on is so huge. Who's going to be able to, it's only a few people who are going to invest that much time and energy into it. And there seems to be plenty of evidence across the board, financial, engineering, physics, circumstantial, tons of evidence that would show that the official narrative is bullshit. And yet, what, 16 years later, it's history.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right? So, you know, conspiracy theorists, it's great. It's good that people are countering the narrative. And I think we're getting closer and closer. People are skeptical. I think that's good.
Yeah.
In general.
Yeah, people are thinking again.
People are thinking again. Right. I think it's positive. It's positive that you assume that powers that be are lying. If you do that, you're working from a distinct advantage.
You're making progress.
But my point being is like in the process. I think it's very easy for us to get sidetracked and caught up in a bunch of just data processing and not
overstimulation.
Overstimulation. Yeah. You know, I mean, another thing is like, okay, let's say there's a cabal. We assume there's a cabal, right? There's a secret power elite or what have you. Maybe not so secret anymore. It's probably part of their plan to be able to operate out in the open, because how much more effective is too much stimulus, too much information? How much more effective is that than secrecy? One.
Secrets usually come out, yeah.
And two, don't you think it's beneficial to these power elite people
to have everybody know what they're doing, and to say, yeah, we're doing it in the open, in your face, and there's nothing you can do about it. How much more effective is that than secrecy and deniability? I think that for me, the psychological impacts of that are way more profound.
Hmm.
Right? So if in fact that's what's going on, I think that game, you know, I don't think these guys care about doing shit in secret anymore. They can do shit out in the open and cause even more chaos in the psyche of the human population because of it. Yeah. So
I think we might be coming to the a time where people might start being more conscious with the information that they're putting out. You know, maybe we might get to that point where you know, people don't want to misinform, you know, their fellow people with, you know, like, you know, because like we were talking about earlier, the conspiracy theorist that's only there to, you know, deceive, and, you know, it's just making stuff up for whatever reason, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't see that too often anymore. At least I haven't come across that, besides, you know, just the usual flat earthers and other things.
Well, yeah, it's like what's his name? Alex Jones, for example.
Yeah, Alex Jones.
Now, on the one hand, Alex Jones putting out a lot of information, and I think a lot of bona fide information, and a lot, you know, I think generally he's like, you know, he appeals to those people who kind of know, hey, we've been lied to all this time. Okay, now the problem now. Or it seems the problem with Alex Jones, and I think there's kind of a backlash to him.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, some people to say he's a stooge, right? and that he's working the reverse psychology, right? And that he's putting all of this information out there in a very angry and aggressive type of way, not necessarily in a benign or sort of neutral informational way, and he's getting people caught up. He's fear mongering. I think that's what I hear about Alex Jones a lot. You know, I don't really have an opinion one way or another. I could see that. You know, I don't really follow him anymore. But when I have, you know, I was glad he was putting information out there. He was asking questions. He was presenting information other than the official narrative, which I think is good in general. But on the flip side, you know, okay, what do we do with that information? You know, if we allow the revelation of truth to be burdensome on us, to cause us fear, that's counterproductive. So once again, I think that factors in, and I'll go back to what you said. You said it perfectly. You know, now is the time for people to make their own judgments about things, to use their own minds about things, research, ask questions, you know, take everything that everybody says with a grain of salt. And if you are so inclined to dig in a little deeper, whether it's into the official narrative or into the counter narrative, but for people to make their own decisions about things and to not jump on anybody's bandwagon one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Right. Unless it feels like that's something that they could follow, you know, like it's something mm-hmm. honorable that they would really enjoy doing and following. You know, it's, which is a rare thing to come across these days, obviously. I still have yet, I've just recently finding finding something like that. You know, coming across piercing the, you guys with Piercing the Veil and the whole tribe out here in Dallas. And
Yeah, I mean, and it's, again, it's easy to jump on a bandwagon, man. It's it's hard for people. It's difficult. It's more challenging to use one's own mind and to formulate one's own opinions based on intuition, common sense, research, you know, gut instinct, you know, proof, knowledge, analysis. It's really difficult for us to use our brains like that. You know, we haven't necessarily been trained to do that or to trust ourselves in that regard. And yeah, which does make it easy for people to jump on a bandwagon, even if it's a counter narrative bandwagon, right? Makes them feel safe, makes them feel a part of something positive, a revolutionary, a rebel, an anti-establishment, and like anti-establishmentarianism. That is actually a word. Anti-establishmentarianism is cool now. You know, like the way it was in the 60s, right? To be anti-establishment was cool. And, you know, that's like almost a uniquely American thing, the American rebel thing. To be anti-establishment in and of itself is cool and hip and has some kind of psychological benefit. But that's, in my view, not enough. That's not necessarily going to lead you to the truth. It's just going to lead to another us against them dynamic, which in my view is always limiting. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. It's not exactly freeing.
Right.
As they wished it was.
Right. Right. It just makes me feel like I'm right. It's needing to be right
in the moment.
Yeah. It's needing to be right. You know, so a lot of, you know, that's what I see in a lot of. So it's a mixed bag. I guess it's a mixed bag. I would suggest to folks, whatever it is, whether it's some event that happens out in the world or in the media or something that is personal to you and your experience, you know, I would encourage people to look at it from all sides and to really make their own decisions about things. And that's not particularly easy to do, but I think that typically leads to the better outcomes. And then if we all do that, then I think we're more inclined to come at some reality. Yeah, man. Well, that's awesome. I'm glad you came on today, bro.
Yeah, man. You had some interesting topics.
Yeah,
this is a good show, man. I like talking about the conspiracy theories and all that, you know, and I think it's something that maybe we can talk about again some other time.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, definitely if people look back throughout history, conspiracy is the modus operandi, man. That's everything's a fucking conspiracy, really. So, you know, I would suggest to people who, you know, don't dog out the conspiracy theorists as wackos and nut jobs right away. You know, do your own thinking and at least give them the benefit of the doubt that they are at least attempting to create some kind of counter narrative. That would be my suggestion. So listen, we got a few seconds left. I want to thank you, John, for coming on the show. Jordan may or may not be with us next week. And, man, what's this thing about plague? Can we get some plague callers on here next week? That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get plague people who are listening to us all over the world, it seems, according to information that we've arrived at from this app called Plague. And if you all are out there, call in. So we're going to do a call-in show next week. We don't quite know the nature of it, but I'm specifically addressing all these plague listeners, people who've heard about us, who have referred by someone else. Call into the show. It's BBS Radio, Piercing the Veil. You can log on and check out the site, see what number you need to call to be able to call in on our show. We'll be here next week. I definitely want to hear from these people out in the world. I want to know who you are, where you're coming from, and what your interests are. And with that, thanks again, John. Thanks again, listeners. And we will see you all next week. Same time, same channel. Peace.